Welcome to Stage 16. We are back after a very long time, but there have been some interesting changes. Sean Roberts is no longer with the show, sadly. He has decided that his life is far too busy putting people in houses in Florida and making lots of money and driving his Porsches around and wearing his Rolexes. And he needs to dedicate time to that. So, you know, I will miss him. I'll miss the energy, but we're still doing our regular phone calls once a week. What I have done is asked a friend of mine to join the show as a co-host. And so, for our first of the new Stage 16, Stuart Bannerman, here you are.
Here I am, Sean. This is strange because I'm so used to, I mean, we've spoke on my podcast a few times, but I'm so used to listening to the two Seans having a conversation about things that happen in the movie world. And you sort of say he's happy driving his Mercedes and stuff. I think he's just watching Top
Porsche,
Gun Maverick.
Porsches.
I think he's just watching Top Gun Maverick on a loop. That's what I think.
You know, I mean, he does, or he watches selected scenes. I know that this week, it was a Michael Douglas week for him. And so he told me that his wife had never seen all of Black Rain or what was the other one they watched? Falling Down, maybe? No, not Falling Down. I can't remember. Anyway, he was showing her some early Michael Douglas. I know what it was. It was Basic Instinct. So she had never seen all of Black Rain and she had never seen Basic Instinct. And so he broke those out and put them on the 70-inch for the weekend and showed it to her. And not surprisingly, she thought they were awesome movies because they are.
That's a great double bill. I watched Black Rain probably a few months ago. I haven't seen Basic Instinct for a few years, but I may have to revisit that one.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I don't know why. I think you probably saw it on Twitter. I tweeted about it because I saw that film in the theaters when it opened and I saw it with my dad and immediately I just thought that movie was awesome. And then in subsequent years, I realized it hasn't quite had the life that I would have expected. It didn't even do that well in the theaters in the 80s. And then I looked the other day on Rotten Tomatoes and saw the score for it and it was really low. And I was shocked at it being like, I think it's in the 40s or 50s. I'm going to have to look it up now.
Do you think some of that could be because of the subject material?
Because he's kind of a dirty cop,
Well, no, it's just the whole LGBT thing. I think at the time when the film came out, it was fine. You know, there were protests and stuff. But nowadays, people are far more
sensitive. Oh, you mean Basic Instinct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Basic Instinct. Well, I was talking about Black Rain, but...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Sean and I did talk about that because he was saying, you know, making a bisexual woman into a possible serial killer, you know, it's not the way that you would do things now, probably. So, yeah, in that case, definitely, I think. So that was, what, 92? Yeah, Basic Instinct was 92.
Black Rain was, what, 89?
89, yeah.
Great film.
Yeah, I love it. So let me tell you, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Black Rain is 55% audience and 54% tomato meter critics.
Where would you put it? I would put Black Rain, if I was scoring it on a percentage, I'd probably put it like a 78.
Somewhere around. I would probably go 80%. I just think it's a really good movie. I mean, I put it up there among some of Ridley's best visually and the, you know, the score by Hans Zimmer. And I love that movie. So, but I mean, I also, you know, I have very specific memories of seeing it with my dad in 89 and just thinking like how badass Michael Douglas was. And then to rewatch it now. And so many of the Japanese cast are gone. They've passed away. Sato's passed away, Matsumoto's passed away. So it's weird to look at it now with the passage of time, but I still think it's an excellent movie. So if people haven't seen that, look up Black Rain.
I think it's definitely one of Ridley Scott's underseen films, isn't it? If you sort of rattle off a list of Ridley Scott films, Ridley's Black Rain is one that doesn't get mentioned as much as it should.
Yeah. And I mean, look, Ridley's career, I think anybody would say, is sort of hit and miss, a little bit spotty. You know, there for every gladiator, there's like two or three counselors. I like Matchstick Men, but it wasn't a particular hit for him. The other Russell Crowe movie did about the winery, I think it was called A Good Year. Yeah, a lot of those movies are not received, but you got Black Hawk Down, you got Alien, you got Gladiator, you got movies like that that stand the test of time, the original Blade Runner. I don't know. I don't know how Black Rain doesn't sort of sit among the top of his movies. It does for me.
Same. And for me too.
So we are now post the EE BAFTA Awards. And I wanted to, did you watch the show?
I didn't. And the reason I don't watch them is because I always know the results before the TV broadcast starts because of social media and stuff.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because here in the UK, it'll be on TV from about 9 o'clock at night. And yet,
is that when it starts? It starts that late?
Well, that's when it starts showing on TV because they show it like an hour or two after it's actually happened.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So by that time, I've had the email alerts. I've seen the tweets. I've seen the hashtags. So it's like, well, unless it's a really good speech I want to watch, I don't tend to bother.
Okay. Were there any speeches that you sort of thought, oh, I better look at that?
I looked at Barry's, mm-hmm. Barry Keegan.
Yep.
And I was very happy when he won. I've seen
him
in a lot of films.
Is that how you say his name?
Keegan? I think that's how I say it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I was listening to some of your previous episodes, and I think it's Edgerton for Taron Egerton.
Oh, Edgerton.
That was not one.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But no, Barry Keegan, I believe, is how you pronounce it.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Because I don't think it's any secret to anybody that does follow me on Twitter. I really wanted Ke-Hee Kwan to win. However, I recently on Instagram posted just the little scene in Banshees where he kind of asks Carrie Condon if she would go out with him or marry him.
Yeah.
And it's such a heartbreaking moment. And it's played so beautifully by Barry. That I was kind of like, well, okay, on that, just even on that moment alone, if he wins, I'm totally good with it.
Yeah. It is the scene, isn't it? Because I think it's something that most people have been in that position when you say, oh, I really like you. Let's go out. Oh, you don't want to. How do I get out of this conversation without looking like an idiot?
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, all right, then. That's kind of what I thought. Which is so sad. Even the response is sad, you know. And certainly, you know, no spoilers, but the way that character's trajectory plays out is pretty sad.
Yeah.
Did you see have you seen all the films that were nominated for BAFTAs or Oscars?
I have seen quite a few of them. I'm just trying to bring up a list of the films.
Well, so best film for the BAFTAs was All Quiet. Yeah. Which is
I haven't seen that
Netflix.
Yet, even though it's sitting on my Netflix for however many months. I've seen Elvis. I've seen half of Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Why just half?
I just couldn't gel with it.
Okay.
I think it's one of those films that everybody's super hyped for me. You know, because I watched it quite late and everybody was like, oh my God, it's the best film of the year, blah, blah, blah. And I just couldn't. I'm a bit odd with the multiverse thing. I'm not a huge fan of those.
Yeah.
But everybody in it was great. Michelle Yeoh was great. Key was great. The Daniels have done an amazing job. The style was fantastic. I just couldn't get into it. I struggled.
Yeah.
But I'll go back again.
I have to be honest. I've tried to look at it three times, and all three times have not finished it. I have immense respect for the Daniels for what they've done. I heard that the movie was budgeted at like $14 million, which when you look at the sets and the costumes alone is sort of mind boggling that they were able to pull it off.
Yeah.
But the sort of wilder aspects of it, I just couldn't kind of wrap my brain around. I don't mind the multiverse stuff. Like Spider-Man, Far From Home. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved the way that was done. And the way that they did it here with, you know, seeing her almost flashing through all these different things was, I thought, extraordinary. But the movie tonally, you know, the butt plugs and the hot dog fingers and stuff was just not my vibe. So
I just fully accept, you know, sometimes you watch a film and you think, I don't like it. Everybody else does. And I'm probably wrong. It is a good film, and I accept the fact that I'm wrong on this occasion. I'm kind of like that with Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. There, I kind of felt that. Did you like Nope?
I haven't seen that yet because I heard the mixed reviews, so therefore it dropped down the list of films to watch, which is a stupidly long list.
So I watched it, but I think I'm not smart enough, and I had to go on YouTube and watch a video where someone explained what everything was supposed to mean, which I don't even like. Certain films, if that's the deal, like, I don't even mind doing that. I don't even mind sort of going back and letting someone who's really analyzed it point things out to me, and then I can sort of sit with that and let me see where that moves me on the scale. I didn't love Nope overall. But I definitely, in the similar way with Everything Everywhere, once I found out sort of all the layers of it, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, okay, that's pretty cool. But, you know, where I did love Get Out, and I didn't sort of need somebody to explain it to me, I didn't need a manual for Get Out. I felt like I needed a manual for Nope. And sometimes if it's doing that, in a film, I'm like, I'm a little bit lost. I'm just sort of looking at the surface here. And so it was a similar thing. Like, I was like, well, everybody else kind of seems to be digging it. They seem to be uber fans of Peele. So I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, just not my deal.
I was the same when I watched Darren Aronofsky's Mother.
Yeah.
I watched it and I hated it. And then I went online, read what it was about, and I'm like, this film is genius. This is one of the best films. It's strange.
Yeah. Then I had to go back and watch it again with the context and then go, oh, okay. But one that didn't work for me was Tenet. I watched probably 10 YouTube videos of people trying to explain it to me, and I was like, I still don't get it. I think it looks cool, but I don't understand anything.
Tenet's a film. I don't understand it either, but I think it's great. But just don't ask me to explain it to you because I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a good experience. I mean, even in the theater, I got to the end because even during COVID, like, I finally, theaters opened again, and I went out and saw it on like an IMAX. And the third act, I literally had the thought in my head, like, I have no clue what's happening. But it's kind of exciting and looks amazing. So I like it. I don't know
just
why.
Don't ask me
but
why.
It's good. So anyway, let me back up for a second, because you obviously have a massive audience on your own show. And for any of the 15 people that are listening to this show, why don't you sort of tell us a little bit about you and your other show and, you know, how you and I came to connect and stuff like that. And then we'll go into the awards again.
I mean, I'm like in my 50s now, early 50s I might add, but I act younger. And through my life, I've spent my childhood wandering around video stores. Then I ended up working in a video store, then owning a video store. And then I closed a video store in 2003, 20 years ago. It's crazy. And I've always been around movies. And so I decided about 13 years ago that I had enough movie stories in me to do a 6-episode podcast series. And I'd get all my, I went to a convention and met Ingrid Pitt and I, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I've now recorded 663 episodes. I've hosted Q&A panels.
Wow.
I've been to San Diego Comic-Con. I speak to awesome people who work on film sets. That includes yourself, Sean. And I think you jumped on as a guest at one point several years ago.
Yeah,
and then
you
periodically revisit my show. And it's great. I always enjoy hearing your stories. And I was very excited when you started your podcast up, both Stage 16 and also Character. So it's an absolute honor to jump onto this one with you while Mr. Roberts is off driving his cars around the US.
That's cool. Well, I don't think I knew about the video store thing. That's pretty great. I think for any cinema fan, especially in our younger years, that's almost a rite of passage, or was, because they don't exist anymore. But I worked at a, when I was living probably maybe 15, 16 years old, I lived with my grandmother in Northern California. I worked at a privately owned video store, not a franchise. And then when I went back to LA, I worked at a Blockbuster for a period of time. I worked for a Blockbuster video when I was just starting to get jobs as a PA, and I didn't know enough people and I wasn't steady. So I had to have a day job that I could call in sick and if I got a movie job or a TV job. And then eventually there was, I don't know if you guys ever had it in the UK, but there was a Blockbuster music store. So I went and worked at that job for a little while. Working in a video store, I remember I worked at a Blockbuster in Santa Monica, California on Montana Avenue. That's now a bank, I think. And when my uncle used to get Oscar VHS tapes, we would put them on after close. So we were like restocking the store and ordering the shelves and stuff. We'd put on movies to watch as we were closing. So I remember one year we had like The Fugitive and it was still showing in theaters and we were watching it. Like, I remember people stopping outside the windows and going, wait a minute. Do these Blockbuster guys get these movies for, advanced screenings or whatever? But yeah. I loved it. I mean, do you still have any of your stuff from back then, like standees and things?
No, I have maybe about a dozen photos and 3 minutes of video that I shot the night before I closed it. And DVD rental sort of was around the time I closed it, 2003. So when it became cheaper to go into a Walmart and buy the films than it would to rent them, that's when I noticed the rental industry sort of waving bye-bye. So I chose to close it with some money rather than run it all into the ground. But I do miss those days. I'm in the process of putting together a little podcast mini-series of my experiences through the video stores beginning from around 1983. So that's sort of formulating in my head at the minute. And I'm hoping to get that out in the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the one that everybody knows about is Tarantino and Video Archives down in Hermosa or Manhattan Beach or wherever it was. But yeah, I mean, it was a whole thing. And actually a lot, I talked to a lot of people who say, like, I miss going on a Friday to a video store and just kind of scanning the shelves. You'd go in there and you'd just look around and you'd see what jumps out at you. And maybe it's an older film you'd never heard of, or, if you couldn't get your hands on the new releases, but you could always go in there and just sort of like look. And there's a buddy of mine, a guy who used to be back in the day, he was on Ain't It Cool News, Drew McWeeny. And Drew McWeeny has slowly over the last few years taken his entire collection, which I have no idea how big it is, but he's been uploading everything to a server called Plex. And he has kindly given me access to his server. So I have access to his entire library. And unlike Netflix, where things just vanish, or HBO, where things just vanish, it's just all there. And he used to do a podcast that I think they didn't finish. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is this the one when they were going through the 80s?
Yeah, every film released every month for all of the 80s.
I caught up with that podcast at maybe 3 months ago, and I'm like, where's the rest of the episodes?
Yeah.
I've been listening to it for like a couple of years.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know the details of he and his co-host, but they just stopped, unfortunately. And he's taken over to doing it as a newsletter now, which is quite popular. But anyway, so all of these movies are there, and there are movies that I've never even heard of that were in there. Some of them they talked about on the podcast, but they're all on this server. And then not only that, but he does this really wonderful thing, which is he has found, I guess, on YouTube, the intros from movie theaters. So like, get your popcorn, get your Coca-Cola, like, or whatever, AMC movie theaters, Odeon movie theaters, whatever the case may be. And any movie you pick from his Plex server, when you hit play, it plays the movie theater thing first,
Nice.
And so it's just a whole experience, and it's really wonderful. And I'm grateful to, if he ever listens to this, I'm really grateful that he's included me on his Plex server. But that's cool. Yeah, I didn't know you'd not only patronized movie shops, but you know, own your own. That's great. Have you ever seen the guy online?
Every single role of the video store I've had, you know, part-time assistant, full-time assistant, supervisor, manager, owner.
Wow. Have you seen the guy online who has recreated a VHS shop in his basement somewhere in the UK, I think?
I have not, but I'll be good looking for that.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, it looks like a set from Stranger Things or something. It's very authentic, but it's incredible. Nice. So anyway, yeah, I miss that. I miss that experience on a Friday or Saturday of going in there and trying to pick out a movie. It's a thing that has just slipped away from us. I do wonder sometimes if it's going to come back. I mean, certainly I'm now on the 4K bandwagon, and while Netflix streams in 4K and I think HBO is in 4K and stuff like that, I did buy a couple 4K discs. I bought the E.T. 40th anniversary release and put that on. The difference is noticeable between streaming and an actual disc. So I think I'm moving slowly back to the physical media bandwagon.
Especially if people are HBO Max fans and they're like, oh, I want to go on and watch Westworld. And then it's not on there anymore.
Yeah, well, that's a really weird thing. I mean, that one I don't even understand because that's their own deal. I mean, whatever. But yeah, it's just you can never find. I mean, I can, thanks to Drew McWeeny, I can find pretty much anything on his Plex server. But in general, you can be looking for a movie and it's just nowhere. It's just not available. And that's kind of a bummer. And then also this thing, I've never had it happen to me. I don't know if it's happened to you, but this thing of the idea that when you buy a movie on iTunes or you buy a movie wherever, you know, you're kind of leasing it, but you actually don't own it. And they can take it away from you. And I see in like forums on Reddit and stuff, people saying like, oh, I bought this thing on Amazon, this digital, you know, movie. And all of a sudden I click in one day and it's gone. Yep. And that's the small print that you just agreed to, is that you don't actually own these things. You're paying for a period of time, and it should they ever lose the licensing, you just don't have that movie anymore. So that's kind of freaky. Like I'd rather have my physical media.
I would, because also how often does our internet go down? You need to have all my digital films, unless you downloaded them locally. They're gone.
That too. I mean, I have pretty good service, I have to say. But yeah, that as well. And also just, I mean, I recently took all my movies out of the jewel cases and put them into sleeves and put them into this sort of apothecary cabinet that I got that I'm in love with. Because I used to have in LA, I had a shelf that was 7 feet across by 5 feet tall. And I had all my movies, alphabetical movies and TV shows, all in that one shelf, and then a little bit up above when I ran out of space. And I did like that, but when I moved to Europe, bringing that all over here was just an insane idea in terms of cost, you know, putting in boxes or putting in suitcases. And for a little while I did. I would go home and I would cart, you know, maybe 50, 70 movies back with me. And then eventually I was like, man, I should just recycle all this plastic, keep the inserts just in case I ever change my mind back, which I did. But yeah, now all my movies are alphabetical in a little kind of card catalog thing that I can look up. And I also got this great app. I don't know if you know about this, but there's an app called CLZ Movies. And it pulls all the information from IMDb and it puts it all alphabetical, and you can get it on like on your iPad or your tablet, and you can just scroll through your whole collection and say, oh, let's watch that. Or, you know, you can hand your tablet to a guest who's staying at your house and say like, hey, what do you want to watch? Let's pick from here, which is pretty great.
I do need to do that. I'm in the process of one of the podcast challenges I had last year was to try and come up with my 100 favorite movies list.
Oh, really? Are you going to do that?
We've done it. And so now my thing is to make sure I own physical media copies of all of those 100. I think I'm about 17 away from having all the 100 So now I've completed that list. I'm now trying to do the 100 to 200.
So you, your shop was a VHS?
It was VHS originally, and then it branched into DVD around 1999. My first two DVDs that I owned were The Matrix and Joel Schumacher's 8mm.
Okay. So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm 47, so I went through that whole... I had everything on VHS as soon as I even had a couple on VHS when they were still $99 a tape. Cause I was just like, you know, I have to have this. And I would save up my money and buy whatever it was. But what was the first big sell through? Was it Top Gun in 86?
The first one I remember in the UK was Pretty Woman.
Oh, Pretty Woman. Okay. Well, that was like 91 or something like that.
That was 90. Yeah.
Okay, because we also had, so E.T. came out theatrically in 82, but they didn't release it on DVD on VHS for a few years.
Yeah, but 88 that came out.
Yeah, and when they did, it was a massive deal, but it was a sell-through. It was like 20 bucks or 29 bucks or something like that. And I remember Top Gun specifically in 86 in the States was probably like $24.95 or something. So like everybody bought Top Gun. So I used to have all these VHS tapes, massive collection of VHS tapes. I probably only got as high as like 300 or so, and then slowly started converting them to DVD when that came out, and now DVD to Blu-ray, and now I'm converting Blu-rays to 4Ks.
And you'll just finish 4Ks, and then 8K will come out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it'll be a while, but they've always got their hooks in me. Plus, they always did. You know, they double dip you. You'd buy, going back to Ridley, you'd buy like Black Hawk Down on DVD, and it would have like one or two special features, and then 6 months later they'd come out with like a 3-disc set or a 4-disc set, and I'd be like, well, I know I'm buying that. So I have multiple copies of some movies, even on Blu-ray.
I had 4 copies of Black Hawk Down. So I had the American, just the film. Then when they released it in the UK, it was a 2-disc set, so I upgraded to that one. And then in America they released something called Superbit, which had the DTS soundtrack on it.
Yeah.
So I upgraded to that one. And then recently I've bought the UK triple disc edition. It's got the soundtrack in it as well.
I was one of the people that supported the wrong company. I went with the Red, the HD DVD that was briefly around, Red laser instead of the blue laser. And I actually believed, or you know, had done a lot of research that the quality was actually better on those, but not enough people supported it, obviously, and it went away like Betamax. Eventually I went over to blue, but you know, now I'm on 4K, and I've bought a physical machine, which is quite expensive because I needed to get a region free so I could get them from home and get them from here and get them from wherever. But I'm pretty happy with it. The quality, like I said, is kind of stunning, and I have a 4K projector, so everything just looks incredible. I haven't finished getting all of my movies into the CLZ application, but I know at the current time I have 1,117 physical discs, or not, you know, movies, and then not counting the multiples of like, you know, Black Hawk Down or whatever.
That's a good collection.
Yeah, it's crazy. my little 3-year-old was like, Daddy, those are your movies. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, and someday they'll be my movies. And I was like, yeah.
Someday. Now here's a question for you. Have you got a section of these movies that you're like, I've worked on all of those? Because I'd have one. If I was you, I would have that section. I worked on every one of those.
No, they're literally just alphabetical, A to Z. But it is funny, my girlfriend the other night, for whatever reason, she was like, we haven't watched K-Pax in years. Can we watch K-Pax? And I was like, you want to watch K-Pax?
Love that film.
And she's like, yeah, let's watch it. And I was like, all right. So we put it on. And, you know, there's a lot of movies I worked on over the years that, like, are on my IMDb, but I didn't get credit on the film itself. And every now and then it's weird because one will pop into my brain and I'll be like, wait a minute, I worked on that. Did I work on that? I guess I worked on that. And then I'll start remembering stuff, and then I'll go and check the credits and be like, oh, they never credited me. So there's some stuff on my IMDb that just says uncredited. But K-Pax is not one of those. K-Pax, my name is on it. And when we were watching it, all this stuff was coming back to me. And one of the things that came back to me was that while I was working on K-Pax, I was standing outside a stage at Universal, and Sean Roberts called me up and said, "Dude, I just got hired on Matrix Reloaded. Do you want to do the show?" And I was like, "Are you kidding me? Yes, I want to do the show." And he's like, "It's San Francisco. It's like 3 or 4 months in San Francisco. I think they're going to let me choose some people. So let me talk to them and see." And literally wrapped K-Pax, got in a car with Sean Roberts. We drove up north to San Francisco, found a house to live in for 3 months, and worked on that movie.
K-Pax is one of the films that's in my top 100.
Is it really?
Very, I love that movie. Yep.
Wow. I think that's kind of surprising. I don't know. Actually, I should look that up. I don't know how the movie, I don't remember how it was received, you know, critically or whatever.
I think, in the video store, people who watched it and they enjoyed it because obviously it had Kevin Spacey's face on it and he was hot at the time from, you know, Usual Suspects and all that sort of stuff. So they would watch it. I think a lot of people got slightly annoyed with the fact that they could make their mind up about the ending.
Yeah.
But I love that fact.
Yeah.
That I could choose whether he was or whether he wasn't from K-Pax. Genius.
Yeah. So critics gave it 42%, but audience score was 74.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. And honestly, in terms of my career in as a production assistant, which was starting to wind down at that time, at what is like 2000, 2001, I was starting to go towards personal assisting or wanting to go towards that. But it was one of the best experiences I've ever had on a set, just in terms of the way that people treated me as a production assistant. I was 6 years in by that time, probably, and people knew that I knew what I was doing. We also, Kevin, he was great. Jeff Bridges was absolutely wonderful. While we were shooting, the DP, John Matheson, got an Oscar nomination for Gladiator. I want to say he won, or somebody on our production won, because the next Monday they brought in their Oscar for us all to hold and take pictures with and stuff. It was either Matheson won for Gladiator, or it was one of our makeup artists, and I can't remember which, or maybe they both won. But so that was something special. And then just being on the Universal lot and like going on lunch breaks and going to Hill Valley, you know, Back to the Future Square and stuff like that. And also the producer, Robert Colesbury, paid the production assistants over the holiday break, which never happened prior to that for me and never happened since that.
So you were spoiled.
It was just unbelievable. There was a masseuse on set. Like, Larry Gordon was one of the producers, and I used to pepper him with questions about Die Hard and stuff like that. And he wanted the crew to just be happy, so he hired a masseuse who would just like randomly come up behind you and start massaging your shoulders and stuff. And you'd just be like, "Oh my God, I'm going to pass out!" You know, like, this is amazing. But yeah, it was just a lovely experience. Yep. So anyway, all right. So best film for the BAFTAs, the winner was All Quiet on the Western Front. Nominated were All Quiet on the Western Front, Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere, and Tar. Now, you said you didn't see Tar yet.
Yeah, I've not seen Tar, and I've not seen All Quiet on the Western Front yet, but everything else I've seen.
So I have to admit that I haven't seen All Quiet either, and the company that I currently work for over here in Prague did the visual effects for the film, and the CEO of our company is nominated for an Oscar and down in LA now doing all of that. So it's a little weird. However, in my defense, it's a very heavy movie. Yeah. And these have been heavy times, and I wasn't necessarily in the mood to subject myself to realistic war violence. No. Though it may be World War I. So I will watch it. I just haven't yet.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure your list of films to watch is hefty.
Because I vote for the Producers Guild. But I've already voted for what I think should win Best Picture, which I won't be a secret. I think just based on what they did, even though it wasn't for me, I think Everything Everywhere should win.
Yeah.
I think from a producing aspect, I can't even fathom what that producer had to pull off. I just don't, I don't understand how they made the movie that they did with what they had. I just don't understand it. So I voted for that in first position. But you vote for, you know, the 10 nominees in a like descending order. So just because you vote for Everything Ever doesn't mean that that's the movie that is going to win if everybody votes for that. Because if people somehow, like you and I, didn't vibe with it and they put it as number three or number five, it changes the weight of the movie, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Outstanding British film. I wanted to ask you about this. Did you watch a film called After Sun?
This is also on my list of films I've not seen yet, and it's supposed to be very good.
Yeah, so I haven't finished it yet, which is super weird. No, it's like really fascinating, but there's something, I won't spoil it for anybody or for you, but it feels like watching someone's home movies from a vacation they took, which is a little weird because, like, if you ever do that in life, they're watching it and remembering the little things that they did from day to day or whatever the case may be, and you don't have any of that reference. So you're just watching shaky cam video of somebody's hotel room and somebody's feet in the sand on the beach, and you're like, yeah, this is, you look like you had fun. That's great. And so it was a little bit that for me. And my understanding is that it does something closer to the end that sort of changes what it is. And some people have called it absolutely brilliant. I will go back to finish it, but haven't seen it all the way through. So that one, Banshees is one of my favorites of the year.
Yep,
you saw
film.
That? Yeah.
Yep.
Brian and Charles, I haven't even heard of.
Brian and Charles is this weird film where it's one of the guys out of Afterlife, the Ricky Gervais TV series.
Okay.
And he's very lonely. So he makes a companion where the body is a washing machine and he makes this robot type thing.
Oh, wait, I have heard of this. Okay. I just didn't know the title, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Looks very strange.
Yeah. Empire of Light.
I really want to watch that.
We did watch that one all the way through. I am a Sam Mendes fan.
Yep.
Didn't work for me.
Oh, no.
I think part of that may have just been that I was sold a certain movie, I think, that wasn't what I got. And that's happened to me a few times before. An example of that would be Punch Drunk Love, which everybody flips out over. I was told that Paul Thomas Anderson was making a 90-minute comedy. and so I went into the theater going, wow, a Paul Thomas Anderson comedy, what's that going to be like? And then it was like this weird movie where, like, in the first 5 minutes, a car flips over and rolls like 15 times and Sandler just like goes back inside. Like, I just was like, I don't understand what this movie's doing. I don't know what world we're in. And so I've consequently never really gelled with that, though I did love, I did think Sandler was great and Phil Hoffman. But that's one of those. So Empire of Light for me was sold as kind of like Sam Mendes' ode to cinema and theaters, you know, the experience of going to the cinema. And to me, it never really did anything to do with that. They all work in a cinema, and quite a beautiful one, as shot by Roger Deakins. But I just was like, I don't really get what the movie's about. Felt like he was trying to do a couple things, and so for me, none of them worked.
If that is it right sense. That the film is more about somebody with autism or something? There's some sort of
Olivia Colman. I don't know. Like, I didn't feel like she was Asperger's or whatever. I don't know what. I'm not sure what she was playing. There's a racism angle in it to a pretty heavy extent. There's, like, you know, neo-Nazis marching in the street. I forget what period it's in. I don't think it's contemporary. I forget. It might be 60s, late 60s. Yeah, it just, I don't know. It just felt like he was trying to say a few different things. That's another common thread. Licorice Pizza, Paul Thomas Anderson. I watched the movie and thought, well, these are four totally different stories that you're just trying to throw together. I'd like to see just the movie about John Peters being a nutbag. I'd like to see the movie just about this actor kid dating this older girl. I'd like to see the movie about the gay couple, one of whom is running for political office. But all mashed together, I think they all get short shrift, and I don't really care about any of them. I know I'm probably alone in that. There's a ton of people that love that movie too. But I also think there are a lot of people who are like P.T. Anderson apologists who are like, it doesn't matter what he does. They eat it up. So yeah, that one. I did see Living, which is nominated for Outstanding British Film. Did you see that one?
I haven't seen that one. Out of this list, there are only the Banshees I've seen. I've not seen any of the others.
You know, Living is kind of lovely, and Bill Nye in it. I've always been a fan of him since I first saw him, and he's really good. And it's an adaptation of Kazuo Ishiguro's movie, I think, or sorry, not Kazuo Ishiguro, I'm totally butchering that. But anyway, it's an adaptation.
Kazuo Ishiguro.
Well, he wrote this one, but it's an adaptation of, God, I can't think of who, another very famous late Japanese filmmaker. God, I have to look it up. Anyway, it's late here and my brain slips away. I have a 3-year-old. So I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. And the other one that a lot of people talked about was Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, which stars Emma Thompson, who I love generally. Didn't see it yet. Not sure how high it is on my list of must-see. Roald Dahl's Matilda the Musical. I didn't even realize that was remade as a film again.
Yeah, Stephen Graham's in that. Okay. So I'll pretty much watch anything with Stephen Graham in, but I've just not got around to watching it yet.
He always plays so many tough guys now.
He does.
It's interesting. Like he was in Band of Brothers, right? Yeah.
He was. I think everybody was in Band of Brothers. Well, I wasn't in it. I don't know if you were. I wasn't.
No, I wasn't asked. I would have been. I would have been happy to. But yeah, everybody was in that. But I liked him in The Irishman. He's a good tough guy in The Irishman.
Yeah.
See How They Run. That's another one I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. That is based on like an Agatha Christie type premise.
Oh, is it? Is it Sam Rockwell?
Yes.
Oh, interesting that got a BAFTA nomination. I heard it was not great. I heard it was kind of a mess. The Swimmers. Another one I don't know.
I'm not familiar with that.
The Wonder, which is Florence Pugh, I want to say, and on Netflix. Didn't see it, but heard about it. So Charlotte Wells won the BAFTA for Outstanding Debut by British Writer, Director, or Producer for After Sun, which, again, mm-hmm. I will go back and look at. Film not in the English language. All Quiet, Argentina 1985, Corsage, Decision to Leave, and The Quiet Girl.
See none of them.
Yeah, me neither. Argentina 1985 won a Golden Globe, I want to say, which was surprising over All Quiet, because All Quiet was the expected front runner, I think. And then documentary, All That Breathes, haven't seen it, heard a lot about it. All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, haven't seen. Fire of Love, I am hearing a ton about, which is about two like volcanologists who fall in love and then die during a volcano explosion.
I've heard of this
one. I think that's what it is, but I've heard it's excellent. So that's high on the list. Moon Age Daydream, I think, was about Bowie, right?
Yeah.
And then Navalny is high on my list because he was obviously, somebody that Putin tried to get rid of. But I haven't seen it. And then animated film, Del Toro's Pinocchio. Did you see that?
Nope. The only animated film one on this list is Turning Red that I've seen.
Okay. I saw that. Did not love it, actually. I can appreciate it. Puss in Boots, tried to watch it. It was kind of too loud, too much going on for me. So I'm sure I'll see it with my kid at some point, but I just couldn't get into it. Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, I've heard is fantastic and really sweet. Yeah. I know it from like the shorts and stuff like that, but I don't know. I don't know when I'll get to that one.
I've heard of the film and I've been told it's amazing, but I'd really struggle to sit down and watch a film that's called Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, to be honest. Even though it's a genius title.
I mean, I like her, Jenny Slate. So I will get to it at some point. I'm sure I'll get to it with my three-year-old, but it wasn't top of the list. And then director, repeat for All Quiet, Banshees, Decision to Leave, Park Chan-wook, Everything Everywhere, Tar, and The Woman King actually got nominated in the UK, but not in the US. Oh. Yeah, again, I voted for Everything Everywhere. I love Banshees. Really, really love that movie. Did not see Decision to Leave. I did watch Tar. We watched it all the way through. I was actually more interested in it when I thought she was a real person. But I found out very quickly in the course of watching it that she wasn't. And that sort of spoiled the rest of the movie for me in a way.
I thought she was a real person.
I did too. I mean, before I watched it. But there's a part right in the beginning where she's being interviewed by an NPR reporter. And they're going through sort of her resume and her credits. And at one point, they say something about an EGOT, you know, which is Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony.
Yep.
And they talk, and I was like, who? It's like, Lydia Tarr won an Oscar for what? And I looked it up, and it was like, no, this is not a real person. But, you know, it's convincingly done. So, like, you, for the first, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, like, you're buying it. But I was like, there's no way this person won an Oscar and I don't know who this person is. Not that I'm like a complete Oscar expert, but I definitely, if it was in like the last decade, I would have heard the name.
Yeah.
So that kind of gave it away. And then after that, I mean, I think it's a brilliant performance. And I think obviously she's the front runner with Michelle and she won the BAFTA. So maybe she'll win the Oscar too and take it away from Michelle. But, yeah, I don't know. The movie looks extraordinary. Like its design, its production design, art direction is absolutely excellent. But I don't know. I found it a bit difficult to get into. Screenplay, original screenplay, Banshees, Everything Everywhere, The Fabelmans, Tar, and Triangle of Sadness, which is another one that I have not watched, but I hear kind of amazing things about. I watched the trailer and I'm like, man, I don't know if that's going to be for me, but I do want to watch it.
Same. Fabelmans, I've seen. Fabelmans, I really enjoyed. Really like.
Yeah, I people are kind of mixed on it, but I really thought it was lovely. There wasn't a lot in it that I didn't know because I've probably read every Spielberg biography there is. But I did really like it. The bit at the end, the high school stuff, felt very much West Side Story, which, you know, obviously was the year before or 2 years before. I was like, it's fine. But getting to that very last scene, which I won't spoil, is worth the whole everything, even things I didn't love. I just was like, yes, okay, happy. I'm very happy at the end.
I find it weird that Judge Hirsch has been given an Oscar nomination because he was only in it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened, right? Judi Dench won the Oscar, I want to say, for Shakespeare in Love, and she was on screen for like 8 minutes. Yeah. So they've done that before. You know what was funny is I watched a Q&A with everybody from the Fabelmans, and Judd Hirsch at one point goes, I don't know why he'd think of me to play a Jewish guy. I have no idea. And Spielberg leans forward and goes, Independence Day? And he was like, oh, really? Oh, was that it? Okay. I was like, you're kind of the same guy. You really are kind of the same guy, just older. If you're doing that, you know, but that was funny. Yeah. So original screenplay, BAFTA gave it to Martin McDonagh. Who I'd give it to, actually. I think Banshee's screenplay is just lovely. Adapted is All Quiet on the Western Front, which won the BAFTA. Living, The Quiet Girl, She Said, which I was surprised to see get in there, and The Whale.
I want to watch The Whale. I have seen She Said.
Yeah, She Said we watched, not bowled over by it. My favorite scenes were like the scenes where like Harvey was calling in to try and browbeat the Andre Brower, the editor. Those scenes I thought were kind of electric, and everything else I was like, eh, it's fine. Obviously, the gold standard of reporter movies is All the President's Men, and I don't think there's ever been one since then that equaled the intensity or the sort of, I don't know, very specific reality of that film. So it was fine. She Said was fine. I didn't expect it to get nominated for anything anywhere at all, but it did at the BAFTAs. And The Whale, yeah, we liked The Whale, but more for the performances than the film as a whole. It feels very much like a stage play, which is what it was. There's a character in it who you're kind of just like, I don't know. I was like, you could cut this whole thing out and I wouldn't miss it. I wouldn't really care. But it's there. Sadie Sink is excellent. And of course, Fraser is really wonderful in it. And I'm fully supportive of his massive comeback. I hope it continues.
Same.
Leading actress, Kate Blanchett, won the BAFTA for Tar. Viola Davis for The Woman King. Danielle Deadwyler for Till. Anna de Armas for Blonde, which surprised me. Emma Thompson for Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. And Michelle Yeoh for Everything Everywhere. This is a two-horse race, both at the BAFTAs and the Oscars. It's only going to be either Kate Blanchett or Michelle Yeoh. That's just what it's going to be. I vote for Michelle, too. I do think that Kate was magnificent in Tar. She's kind of, I don't know. But part of me feels like there's a little bit about Kate Blanchett that is like that character. She's more Lydia Tarr than Galadriel, let's say. And I worked with her on a movie. She's a little bit sort of untouchable. But yeah, I give it to Michelle, who I've also worked with and who I absolutely love with all my heart. And somebody is trying to put me back in contact with because I just think she's great.
Yep.
Leading actor winner at the BAFTAs was Austin Butler. You said you did watch Elvis.
I did. I enjoyed Elvis. I'm not a huge Elvis fan, but I do love biopics.
Let me ask you this.
That was obviously Baz Luhrmann.
Yes.
It was still quite good.
It was Baz Luhrmann for sure.
Yeah.
Did the length of the movie hit you?
No, not at all. I probably couldn't even tell you how long that film was. It didn't get me looking at my watch.
Okay. It's like 3:10 or something like that. It's really long. But like every movie lately is long. Like I just heard John Wick 4 is going to be like 3 hours. And I was like, oh God. I just think it's a bit too much. Colin Farrell for The Banshees was nominated. Brendan for The Whale. Daryl McCormack, I guess, is the guy opposite Emma Thompson in Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. He looks like an ethnic version of my friend Zach Levi to me, like the guy who plays Shazam, Zach Levi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For some reason, they look like there was something going on there with their families. Like, you know, nobody was talking to each other. They went on a vacation to the UK and, you know, had a quick affair. I don't know. Don't kill me, Zach. And then Paul Mescal for After Sun, which I was like, okay, cool. Very, very naturalistic performance. You'll see it when you watch it. He's also going to be in the Ridley Scott Gladiator sequel as the lead, which is fascinating. And a bit strange since the guy who played the kid in Gladiator is still acting and grown up and very good looking and could probably do it. He must be crying right now. And then Bill Nye for Living. I wanted Fraser to win just because I wanted Fraser to win because I want him to have that comeback. In a lot of the same way that I want Ke-Hi Kwan to have that comeback. Yeah. But I was happy that Austin Butler won. I thought he was excellent.
Same. I was also hoping that Colin Farrell might have got it because he was very good in Banshees.
He was. And he's a lovely really lovely guy. So in favor of him having continued success in any way possible. But yeah, and he was heartbreaking and was different and he was sweet and definitely different than we've ever seen him before. So yeah, I mean, I would have been equally happy if Colin won.
I'm sad the donkey didn't get any form of
Jenny the donkey, yeah. Some special BAFTA award, animal performance. Supporting actress was Angela Bassett, Black Panther, Hong Chow for The Whale, Carrie Condon for Banshees, Dolly De Leon for Triangle of Sadness, Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere, and Carey Mulligan for She Said, which was a little surprising. Yep. Carrie Condon, the winner for Banshees. Fantastic.
It's the right choice.
Absolutely. Yeah, right just one. Excellent. Having said that, my second, as much as I love Jamie Lee, would have been Hong Chow in The Whale, and when you see it, you'll know why.
Okay.
Supporting actress Brendan Gleeson, Banshees, Barry, I'm going to say Kyogen.
Okay.
I don't know that's it, but I think it is. Ki-Hee Kwan, Eddie Redmayne for The Good Nurse. Did you see that?
No, I'm not a huge Eddie Redmayne fan. Oh, I don't know why.
Man, I got to tell you, though.
I'm just not a huge fan.
I got to tell you, though, watch the movie. It's quietly impressive, and it's a true story, and I didn't know about it, and it's very surprising. Albrecht Schuch for mm-hmm. All Quiet, and Michael Ward for Empire of Light. I mean, damn, Brendan Gleeson.
I would like Kiev to have won it, to be fair.
Yeah.
I want him to get as much of a comeback as Brendan does.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine. And he's going to be on Loki season 2, and he has a new series that he's doing with Michelle Yeoh that's supposed to, you know, the buzz is already really high on it. So I think he's fine now. I think his career is firmly in high gear. I'm fully advocating for Disney Plus to do The Adventures of Short Round and give us that series. I don't think they are going to, but I think they should. I am also, you've probably seen my Twitter, I am pushing very hard for a Goonies sequel. I really am. You have Academy Award nominee Ki-Hee Kwan. You have Josh Brolin, who's been in, you know, one of the movies that's the top grossing of all time in The Avengers. You have Astin, I think, still getting a lot of popular acclaim off of Stranger Things and Lord of the Rings still all this time later. So, like, those three guys alone, if you, just as a side, Warner Brothers, look at what legacy movies have been doing. Look at Maverick. It's not going to make a billion, right, if you make a Goonies sequel. But you take the legacy cast, they're the adults. They've had children. The children go on an adventure. They get stuck somewhere. The parents have to go get them. That's the movie. It's simple.
It's an easy one.
It's a layup.
Yep.
And the tickets that sell are for us, who were fans of the original in the 80s, and our kids.
Yep.
So we're going to take the whole family. It's a no-brainer. I don't understand why they're not doing that. Anyway, yeah. I was happy to see Barry win it. I think he's great in the whole film, but that one scene I mentioned earlier is just heartbreaking and beautiful, and he's great. He'll make an interesting Joker in the next Matt Reeves Batman if they go that direction. But yeah, in my heart, I wanted Key to win. I wanted Data or Short Round to win. Original score, All Quiet is the winner. Babylon nominated. Thought that was a very strange score. Banshees of Inisherin, Carter Burwell. I don't know if you feel the same way. I feel like Martin McDonagh is the closest thing we have to the Coens now.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like the sort of quiet.
Quirkiness.
Yeah, quirky and quiet that then veer into some strange violence that you're maybe not expecting. I don't think there's anybody out there that's doing that now. And the Coens have sort of like gone away from each other and they're doing their own stuff and it's kind of not the same. So I wasn't surprised that Carter Burwell did his film, and I really love Carter Burwell. Son Lux for Everything Everywhere All at Once. The score for that film never jumped out at me at all. There's nothing in it that I think of. And Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio by Desplat. I love Alexander Desplat. I got to share a table at a dinner with him once. He's a really nice man. Haven't seen Pinocchio, so I can't really, Can't say much about it, but I will listen to it. I'm a fan of his, so I should listen to all, being such a score fanatic the way I am, but I haven't.
Add all those to your list.
All of them. And then, well, cinematography, All Quiet, The Batman, which I thought was pretty amazingly shot and interesting looking. Mandy Walker for Elvis, Empire of Light, Deacons, and Top Gun Maverick. Now, Claudio Miranda for Top Gun Maverick did not get an Oscar nomination, which I found shocking,
yeah,
given what they did on that film. All Quiet, James Friend won. Again, haven't watched the movie, so have to do that. But that's a big win when you beat Deacons, Greg Fraser, and Claudio Miranda. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And it's a good set of films in that category, though.
Yeah. So I think we'll skip sort of all the kind of the other tech categories for now. And we have a lot of the same nominees, so we've gone through them for the Oscars. But the Oscars are yet to come. I do want to talk about one specific person in supporting actor. That, have you seen Causeway? With
I have not
Jennifer
seen
Lawrence?
Causeway. Should I watch Causeway?
He's really lovely in it. Brian Tyree Henry. I'm definitely a fan of his. I'm not even from Atlanta, which is a TV show that I've never gotten around to, but I liked him in Bullet Train. Like I've liked him in everything. And then he did this movie and I was like, boy, this guy can act, man. He feels real. Everything he does, he feels real. But in this movie, it's a really beautiful performance. So when he snuck in there, I was like, oh, that's good. But I think at this point, given the BAFTAs, the Oscar for supporting is between Barry and Key.
I'll be happy whoever wins, but I kind of want Key to win it. Really.
I really do. I mean, he's cleaned up every other thing except the BAFTA. So it's kind of like, please just give it to him. The guy deserves it. He's been around forever. And he's really good in that movie, you know, in a movie that I didn't love, but I loved him in it. And he's doing cool stuff.
And I saw him on a Hollywood Reporter roundtable as well, and he was sitting around with, like, Austin Butler and stuff. And he's so humble. He's like, I don't really know why I'm here. And I was surprised to get the phone call, and I don't know when my ride's going to end. It's just...
Yeah. You know, and he's taking the selfies with everybody, pointing at, like, look who I'm standing next to. Like, he just feels like he won a lottery. But the truth is, like... I don't know if it was in that, but in one Q&A that he did recently, it might have been with like Colbert or something on the Late Late Show in the US, he was like, I thought people forgot about me.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like for people like me, I was like, I didn't forget about you, dude. I either watch, you know, Temple of Doom or Goonies once a year, or maybe a couple times a year. So like, you're always present in my mind, you know, that kid version of you. And I would have welcomed you on screen in anything prior to this. And it's sort of baffling that the industry just sort of like, you know, pushed him aside as soon as those two movies were done and he didn't know what to do. So, yeah, I want him to win so that, you know, even if Loki doesn't work out or this other series with Michelle Yeoh doesn't work out somehow, he's always got that. Like he'll be the first, cast member from the Goonies to have an Oscar.
And we will get him in the short round Disney Plus show.
Yeah,
as well.
We can keep pushing on Twitter and stuff. Did you hear about actress in a leading role, this whole controversy about Andrea Riseborough sneaking in there?
I did. There's always a controversy. There's always, I hate, they were snubbed, this person's in, let's count how many women with long hair versus women with short hair and how many different skin tones are in it. It's the whole whirlwind that pops up whenever these things are announced drives me insane.
Yeah, it's a little silly. You know, I mean, look, whatever they did to get her a nomination by getting, you know, Jennifer Aniston to host screenings and whoever else, they did it right. Look, back in the day, good old Harvey Weinstein, was known for campaigning, and that's what it is. The whole thing, whether it's a BAFTA or an Oscar, it's a campaign, and it goes on for 6-9 months. And these people are tired. But if they get out there and they shake people's hands and they do the lunches and they do the dinners and they do the Q&As and they get other famous people to you know, back them and say this is a performance you should see somehow, then good for her. She got a nomination. You know,
she's a good actress.
I did not watch Till yet, again, because I know it's going to be a heavy movie. But I like Danielle Deadwyler. I liked her in The Harder They Fall. I don't think I'd ever seen her before. So I was like, wow, she's good. Where'd she come from? Is it a bummer that she didn't get a nomination? Yeah, I probably. When I watch the film, I'm sure I'm going to say, like, yeah, she should have been nominated. But there's only so many slots. So what are you going to do?
I think if Top Gun Maverick doesn't win everything, I'll be very disappointed. But I'll accept it. You know,
I don't think it's going to win.
It's not going to win. It should.
It'll win like sound design and sound editing, and it'll win, I don't know, maybe editing. I like that. I'm glad it got nominated. I'm glad because of the 10 slots that it's in there. And Jerry Bruckheimer, after the career he's had, gets his first nomination for an Oscar. That's kind of wild. Cruise getting nominated. The writers, you know, McQuarrie, everybody getting nominated. That's pretty great. So that's, to me, like, that's its own reward already. It's not serious enough for the Academy to give it the trophies, but it certainly deserves them.
It does. Yeah, it deserves all the clapping in the world for that film.
Yeah, so I don't know. The Oscars, the BAFTAs, there weren't any real surprises to me. There was nothing that I was like, what the hell is that? Like, how, other than Andrew Riseborough, I guess. But you know, it's weird. Like, the Oscars are still kind of my Super Bowl, which you guys don't have the Super Bowl in the UK.
But no, we do. You know, on Twitter, we get all the adverts and the trailers the day after.
Yeah, so well, that's the good part of it.
We sort of get the Super Bowl.
I never watched the Super Bowl except for the ads and the trailers. So I was very happy for that Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, and I was very happy for that indie trailer. I don't care about the football game. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, since I was a kid, it was a big deal. And I would get to stay up late on that Sunday night and finish out the show at, like, you know, 10 o'clock or midnight or whatever it was. And it still is for me. The movies that win haven't lined up with me in, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years.
Yep.
You know, they just haven't. Like, I would have given the trophy to Moneyball. I would have given the trophy to Michael Clayton. I would have given a trophy to Most Violent Year. And those movies either don't get nominated at all or don't win. So I'm not exactly who's voting in terms of the Academy. But
I think it's always a case of whenever anybody asks me about the Oscar nominations, there's always two answers. There's who I'd like to win and who I think probably will win, and they're always different.
Well, that's it. Yeah. If you do Oscar pools or BAFTA pools, like, that's what you have to do. You have to have, like, I didn't pick that movie because I thought I wanted it to win. I picked it because I think it will win. And we used to do that, you know, at our home Oscar parties too. and then of course you'd get to, like, live action short and everybody's like, I have no idea. I'm just, you know, throwing darts in the dark here. but so I'm excited for it. Of course, living in Europe, I just, at 47 years old, I'm not going to wake up at 2 a.m. to watch it. So
wake up at 7 and just check your Twitter feed.
Yeah. I'll look on the Twitter. Yeah. I'll get on YouTube and watch the speeches and stuff. It does kind of bug me that, you know, I don't have the will to do it anymore. But at the same time, because I know Top Gun's not going to win everything, I think I can sleep through it and get the recap.
Well, I was working night shifts last year. And so I saw Twitter explode with the whole Will Smith, Chris Rock thing.
Oh,
I'm like, surely that's not happened. Surely it must be made up. It must be a joke. It's not a joke. What's going on? So I saw that unfold in real time.
Yeah, I watched it at, like, when I woke up the next morning, like 7 a.m. and everything was blowing up. I was like, wait, what? And then I watched it. And then at first I thought, oh, that's a bit. Like, they worked that out. But then it's like, I'm saying that. And then he goes back to his seat and shouts. And I'm like, oh, that's not a bit. You can't say the F word on ABC television. Like, that's not part of the joke. So, okay, this is a real thing, which was really surprising. if you haven't, on YouTube, there's Jimmy Kimmel's Oscars trailer. If you haven't seen it, it's quite fantastic because it's almost entirely related to Top Gun Maverick. And he got John Hamm and the actor who plays Warlock to sit in and do their roles again. And they do reference the slap in there, and it's quite funny. So it's worth looking up on YouTube.
I will check that out, Sean.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that wraps our first episode of the new Stage 16. So, Stuart, just let me say officially thank you for being part of the show and joining me, because I was really desperately not wanting to go solo. And when I was talking with Sean about who could come in, you know, I was like, I got an idea. I think I'm going to be okay. I got an idea. If he wants to do it, it'll be all right. So you being here makes me feel all right. So thank you.
I'm proud to be your wingman. And, Mr. Roberts is listening to this episode. Thank you for all the other episodes, Sean. I've enjoyed listening to you two guys, you know, doing all the previous episodes you've done.
Well, I imagine he will be listening, and you know, for Mr. Roberts, I'll just say that I don't think I'm going to have to edit any keyboard clicks or mouse clicks or pen clicks or throat clears from Mr. Bannerman. So I'm sort of happy about that, but I still miss you, buddy. So, all right, that is the episode. These are going to be one a month now. We're not going to try and do them as crazy as we did before. So this is our March 2023 episode, and we will see you in April, or you'll hear us in April, I guess, is the right thing to say. So thank you very much for listening, everybody, and check you out next time.
Bye-bye.